Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim, and we're back after a little break, so we appreciate your patience and glad that you're tuning in. As always, I'm joined by the incomparable blue-haired beauty, Brandy. How are you, Brandy?
I'm well, Tim. How are you?
I am outstanding, Brandy.
Excellent.
Did you enjoy our little break?
It was all right, Timmy, but, you know, I missed you in the land of the heathen.
Well, I thank you for missing me. I miss you guys as well, but I am back. And
Would you like to tell our listeners where you were and what you was doing, Timmy?
Well, I would like to tell them where I was. I don't know if I want to tell them what I was doing, but I was in the beautiful country of Colombia. It's very beautiful down there in South America, and I had a wonderful time, and but now it's time to get back to work and time to get back to our podcast.
You trying to gloss over that one real quick, ain't you?
Yes. Yes, I am. Joining Brandy and I, as always, is the very honorable and distinguished Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. So, Charles, how have you been?
I'm good, Timmy. I appreciate you. I kind of missed you, but then, you know, I was gone, too. I've been spending some time up in New Hampshire.
Yeah, how's that? How's your campaign going?
The campaign's going good. I'll tell you a funny story.
Okay.
You know, so I'm up there. Now, John McCain, I don't know what the hell he's doing up there.
John McCain was in New Hampshire?
He stops by every time. Every time there's press, there's John McCain.
Okay.
But, you know, now, John McCain had the cancer, the melanoma.
Right.
Okay.
It's a serious condition.
Very serious condition. And Marco Rubio, we decided one day to just mess with him.
Okay. What did you guys do?
Well, as we were talking to Marco, we just kept staring at his cheek. And Marco was like, what? We're like, nothing. Never mind. And then finally, we just get up close to him and start staring at him. And John McCain's like, what is that on your cheek there, Mario? You need to go get that checked out.
Now, Mario.
Marco Rubio. I'm sorry. Marco, I keep calling him Mario, but Marco.
Okay. And, well, you're probably close to him. You probably call him Mario.
Yeah, I call him Mar. But,
good Lord.
So, John McCain, you know, because he had the melanoma and he acts all real concerned and everything. And we're like,
so, you're playing funny ha ha's with John McCain?
Is it? Are you?
Yeah, we played a trick on Rubio.
Oh, Rubio. Oh,
yeah. He had a little tiny freckle on his cheek.
Yeah.
We were like, you know,
like a sunspot.
And John McCain's like, you need to go get that checked out.
It's similar to things we do to you.
Oh, he was running out. We didn't see him for 2 days.
Really?
2 days, yeah. You talk, and, you know, he dumb anyway.
Uh-huh.
He dumb anyway, so we didn't really miss him. But we're going to get Ted Cruz next.
Oh,
yeah, you would not think John McCain the jokester he is.
Yeah.
But he's a funny man.
He's not low-hanging fruit, though.
Well, that's true.
He's a hoot.
Oh, he's a funny, funny man. But then he can get all crazy. He can get crazy. One minute he's funny, one minute he's crazy. But I think he's about 84 years old now, so
yeah,
his moods fluctuate.
Okay, so you don't have much competition up there, I guess, on the Democratic side. You got Hillary, but you're running neck to neck with her on the Democratic side.
Well, I had a little run-in with Hillary.
Was it not pleasant, or...?
You know, Hillary wears the pantsuits all the time.
Right.
And I told her, I was like, Hillary, you know what? Wear a skirt, for Christ's sake. Everybody know you got the cankles. You're just really? Covering up the cankles with the pants.
We're doing everybody kankles now.
Well, come on. You got the cankles. Everybody willing to accept you. You know, just take the wear a skirt for God's sake.
Okay, well,
quit wearing the pantsuit. Colonel, no, there ain't nobody gonna judge you for the cankles.
Colonel, you've probably have offended just about everyone in the audience by at this point. So maybe we should move on. Do we have any sponsors today?
Just let me say, and I don't like to get too political on this.
Right.
But if you're a Republican and I offend you, good. If you're a Democrat and I offend you, good. Because what the country needs are colonelcrats. Right. They need colonelcrats.
Yeah.
So if you're saying I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, you need to be offended. You need to wake up and become a colonelcrat.
You're an idiot.
So I'm guessing I'm not going to get your vote. You know, I don't want your vote anyway, Blue Hair Devil. You're probably going out voting for the Green Party or something.
I'm buying a Star Destroyer. I don't need your shit anyway.
Okay, so look for the Colonel out on the campaign trail. He spent a lot of time in Iowa and New Hampshire getting ready for the primaries and the caucuses out there.
I did. I got us a nice sponsor out there, Timmy.
Okay, tell us about our sponsor this week.
Well, you know, you now in Columbia, I know you was loaded up on the Red Bull because I know what kind of ungodly, heathenly thing
I did have my share. I did drink my share of Red Bull I was in. You know, I'm not as young as I used to be.
I know you was taking a Red Bull, Cialis, Viagra, whatever, cocktails. And yeah, I know what I don't know what the devil do over there. But anyway, there's another line.
Yeah.
Another line of products. This woman made another line of products. And it's really because when you're a lesbian, homosexual, you do a lot of protesting.
Okay.
A lot of protesting. So what she did, she came out with Pink Bull instead of Red Bull.
Pink Bull.
Well, you got the Pink Bull for the lipstick lesbians. Okay.
I see.
You got for your dyke lesbians, bull dyke lesbians, you got the flannel bull.
Oh, my
bull.
God.
Okay. She got that. And she got the bear bull.
Does he think we have, like, just enough audiences that we can just offend everyone?
No, I'm just saying, do you know how much energy it takes to carry signs around all day? You're painting a little rainbow thing. You get up in the morning painting rainbow things.
Can
you
we talk
carry
about
a sign
Mata Hari
all day.
Now?
I'm just, can we give a shout out to the...
I'd rather talk about a stripper and a whore than this BS here.
Okay, let's
Well, you start paying for the show then.
I pay in so many ways.
We've offended Democrats, we've offended Republicans, and we've offended lipstick lesbians. And
I'm sure they have taken no offense to that.
Yeah.
It is a product specially designed for them.
Let us say, for the record, that we love Democrats, we love Republicans, and we especially love lipstick lesbians, right?
Oh, my God.
The internet was built around... lipstick lesbians built the internet.
Yeah, stop talking. we got a couple of shout-outs today for folks who... I really want to give a shout-out to some folks who have been very active on our Facebook page. Mimi... who just is outstanding. She sends us a lot of good information and good suggestions. We really appreciate you, Mimi, your participation.
Now, you know Mimi, a personal friend of mine.
I know that. I don't understand why, but I know that.
Well, actually, she's a personal friend of my devil wife.
Yeah. Now, I can understand her being friends with Renee.
And then we...
Because Renee's lovely.
Kind of peripherally, peripherally friends, but...
And I want to give a shout out to Gina, who is also very active. She listens to every podcast. And for all of those of you who have made comments on our iTunes, have given us a review on iTunes, thank you very much. That's how people find us. So if you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave a comment. We would greatly appreciate it. We don't have sponsors on this show. We'll never have sponsors on this show. But and we'll never ask you for money, but we would ask if you'd be so kind to leave us a review on iTunes, because that's really how people find us. So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it. Today's topic, let's move right
we
in.
We did not do our shout out to Dottie.
She doesn't need a shout out every week. Shout out to Scott, who won a bet. Thank you, Scott. Scott's also very happy.
Dottie needs a shout out every single week, Timmy. She raised you better than you act.
Shout out to my mom.
You're a lovely woman, Dottie.
Okay, let's go right into the topic of the podcast today, which is Mata Hari, and who was a very interesting lady who had a very interesting life, and we think she would be a good topic for this podcast. For those of you who are not familiar with Mata Hari, she was born Margaretha Gertruda Margaret Zell on August 7th, 1876, and she died. She was actually executed as a spy on October 15th, 1917 in France. Margaretha is better known to the world by her stage name, which is Mata Hari. For the sake of this podcast, we're just going to refer to her as Mata or Mata Hari. She was an exotic dancer and a courtesan. She moved in very high society circles and became very famous in Europe in the early
society part. Society circles?
What?
Society circles? The hell kind of circle she moved? Society.
High society circles.
You said society.
Oh, what?
It's high society.
Okay. Anyway.
Really?
Mata, as you probably know, she was convicted as being a spy and executed by firing squad in France for espionage for Germany, conducting espionage for Germany during World War I. So that's her claim to fame. But Mata was Dutch. She was born, as I said, on August 7, 1876, in Leeuwarden, the Netherlands. Her father was Adam Zell, him and his wife had four children, including Mata. Her father was a hat maker, and he made his fortune in oil investments. So Mata was quite spoiled early on. She attended exclusive schools until she was about 13. When her father went bankrupt, he had some financial problems, lost all his money. His parents soon divorced, and then shortly after the divorce, Mata's mother died in 1891. Her father remarried when Mata was 17 years old, but there wasn't. It didn't seem like they wanted Mata in the home. So she went to live with her godfather, she studied to be a kindergarten teacher, took classes for that, but her godfather took her out of school when the headmaster started making sexual advances toward Mata. Mata, at that point, was like 17 years old. She was tall. She was 5'10", which is really tall for that time period. Very thin, very attractive. So after that, she dropped out of school studying to be a kindergarten teacher. She went to live with her uncle in The Hague in the Netherlands. And while she was there, she answered a personal ad in a local newspaper from a Dutch colonel, army captain named Rudolf McLeod. And McLeod was stationed in the Dutch East Indies, which is now known as Indonesia. And he placed a personal ad for a wife. So Mata and Rudolf was his name, started exchanging letters and were married in Amsterdam on July 11th, 1895. So Mata and her new husband moved to Indonesia, back to where he was stationed. Now, Mata's husband was 20 years older than she was, so
he was rich.
And that was an important feature because that helped move Mata up into the middle class society in the Netherlands. So
she moved up into middle class.
Yeah, she moved up to an upper middle class society. So that was that's what he brought to the table. She was a young, beautiful woman, and he had money and he had a title. So it was a marriage of convenience. But the marriage did not go well. As I said, Rudolph was 20 years older than Mata. He was an alcoholic. And by all accounts, kind of was verbally abusive to Mata. He blamed her for his lack of progression in his career. He also openly kept a concubine, which was not that unusual at the time, but something that Mata didn't particularly appreciate.
I'd like to know when that died out.
Concubine. I don't know, man. They really need to bring that back.
I wouldn't mind a concubine.
You have several concubines.
Yeah, but I know. But
I'm sorry, but yeah.
I just mean like it should be acceptable. In your religion, it's acceptable.
Yeah, you one of those Mormons. You could have 48 concubines if you want.
No, you're ignorant.
I'm a damn Methodist. The most I can have is a porcupine.
That's the most you should have.
Rudy, your dog.
I got Rudy. Yeah, I got Rudy.
Okay, so the marriage wasn't going too well, but they did have two children. They had a son, Norman John McLeod, who was born in 1897, and Louise Jean McLeod, who was born in 1898. Now, this is kind of sad. Norman, the son, he died at age 2 from complications of syphilis that apparently he had contracted from.
How was he, like little Timmy? He just bounced.
No, dude.
The hell kind of nursery they put him in?
No, he had contracted it from his parents. So either from Mata or from Rudolph. I'm guessing Rudolph was whoring around in Indonesia, yeah. Would be my guess. But, you know.
So he had it at birth? The boy had it at birth?
Yeah. Well, they.
But the girl had it too.
Yeah, the girl had it too. Now, they claim that Mata and Rudolph claimed that the little John, Norman John, was poisoned by one of their enemies or by one of their servants. But, you know, that seems like that might just been a face-saving kind of excuse that they were using, that actually the kid had contracted syphilis from his parents. And Louise, the daughter, so he died at age 2. Louise would die at age 21 from what also appeared to be complications from syphilis. So.
Damn, that was.
She probably contracted on her own by then.
It may be, maybe, or it may again been, you know, from, you know, I'm guessing that Rudolph was a bit of a male whore,
in Kentucky. Oh, I got syphilis from my daddy.
Oh well, anyway. So, and we just offended the whole state of Kentucky. Okay, so while they were unhappily married, to deal with all this trauma going on, Mata threw herself into Indonesian culture. She started taking classes on traditional dance, and she became a performer. She took on the name Mata Hari, which was a Malaysian word. Meaning Eye of the Sun.
Did you mention she was 5'10"?
Yeah, she's 5'10". That was tall at the time.
It's tall now.
Yeah, it's tall now. So she was tall and thin and very beautiful. Apparently, she was the only thing that she was kind of self-conscious about was that she had small breasts. But she
kept them covered. She always kept them covered.
Yeah, she was self-conscious about that.
Which you should do if you got.
But anything
small
else was just all out there.
Yeah. Yeah, she was ahead of her time, that's for sure. She left Rudolph for a little while and went to live with another guy, and then Rudolph convinced her to come back, and she did, but, you know, problems continued. He continued to drink and be verbally abusive, so they end up getting a divorce in 1902. She originally got custody of Louise, but Rudolph wouldn't make his child support payments. So basically she had to give Louise up back to Rudolph because she could not support Louise on her own.
Now you got to wonder what goes through a man's head. He's 20 years older than this woman. She's beautiful, 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
She obviously don't have a problem getting naked. And he's going to be asked to her all the time.
Yeah, but you know, at the time, he was a sailor. He was in the Navy. He probably had a woman in
there. That's where the syphilis came from.
Well, it was probably a woman in every port, you know, and he was living in Indonesia.
Everybody knows
Indonesia is a wonderful country, but, you know.
Yeah, he had money.
Yeah, he had money. So, I mean, he probably fooled around a lot. So, anyway, they did get divorced in 1902. So, for the first time in her life, Mada found herself alone, and she moved to Paris, and she started to perform as an exotic dancer using the skills that she learned in Indonesia. And she made up this whole persona, she made up this whole life story, which was not really uncommon uncommon at the time. Four performers, and so she said she was from Indonesia, and she was trained in the art for years in the art of exotic dance, and really she probably studied just a few months of the dance, but for whatever reason, she used that as her kind of her appeal, and she became, you know, very popular. She would dance naked.
That would make you popular.
Well, she would use a bodysuit, but she would appear naked. But she always, like Brandy said, she always covered her breasts because she was.
How small was they?
Well, I don't.
She was pretty flat. She was pretty flat chested.
Yeah.
Was she like an A cup or something?
I guess, but she was pretty flat chested.
Yeah.
Didn't they have boob jobs back then?
No, I don't think they had the. I don't think they had silicone back in the day. But she was, she became somewhat of a celebrity. Like we said, she was 5'10". She was beautiful. And she became, you know, she lived this bohemian lifestyle. Men found her irresistible. And she soon used that to her advantage. She was making contacts and became, you know, and was seen in the company of very important men. Captains of industry, military leaders, politicians from all different countries throughout Europe.
She was networking.
Yeah, she was networking. And through these relationships, she traveled a lot, through the different countries in Europe, France and Germany and England. And before the war broke out, World War I broke out, she was generally viewed as an artist and a free-spirited bohemian. But as war approached, she started to be seen as somewhat of a wanton and promiscuous woman, and maybe perhaps even a dangerous seductress. So when World War I broke out, Mada continued to travel freely because she was a citizen of the Netherlands, and the Netherlands was neutral, so their citizens could come and go throughout all the countries, the Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary, as well as England and France and throughout both sides, I guess. So she was traveling quite a bit, which it got her into a little bit of a situation.
A wee bit of a situation.
Well, she was trying to avoid battlefields, and she would travel through between France and the Netherlands through Spain and Britain. And inevitably, all of these movements by her attracted attention. Now, she, you know, like Tim said, she kept company with a lot of very wealthy men and a lot of very powerful people. But, you know, that was only going to take her so far. In 1916, she was traveling by steamer from Spain when her ship... when her ship called at the English port of Falmouth. She was arrested and brought to London, where she was interrogated at length by this Sir Basil Thompson. He was assistant commissioner at the Scotland Yard, and he was in charge of counter-espionage. And he wrote about it, saying she eventually admitted to working for French intelligence. She was released a little bit later, and she was staying at the Savoy Hotel. They actually broadcast the full transcript of the interview that she did over the British it's in the British National Archives, but it was broadcast on London Broadcasting in 1980.
She pretty much admitted, like you said, that she was working for French.
But it's unclear, they think, you know, it's unclear if she lied on this occasion. She thought that the story made her sound more intriguing, or maybe if the French authorities were using her in such a way, but they wouldn't acknowledge it, so because they'd be embarrassed or the internal or international backlash. So nobody really knew if she was making that part up.
And here's some good advice for people.
Yes.
And we just had this on another podcast, too. When you're doing unscrupulous things, such as you did on your vacation, but these weren't internet. You weren't breaking international law or local law or just
spit it out. Anyway,
don't do interviews. Don't do interviews with the press.
Well, no, this wasn't the press. This was Scotland Yard. She was doing the interview with.
Yeah, but she did an interview with National Broad. Okay.
No. She did not.
She should have taken a fifth.
They did what they did was.
Here's another one.
London Broadcasting.
When the police want to talk to you, take the fifth.
Okay. London Broadcasting had the transcript and hired actors to play Matahari.
Yeah, and this was sometime later on.
This is 1980.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
1980.
Now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mata, but you got to remember at the time, England and France were allies. So it would be like the United States interviewing someone who's spying for Canada.
A Canadian spy.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as like they thought she was spying for Germany. And that's where the whole double agent thing comes
in. Does Canada have spies, do you think?
Oh, you know they do. Pam Anderson, Brian Adams,
Joey Votto. Joey Votto, I bet he is.
I think he's a spy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In January of 1917, the German military attaché in Madrid transmitted radio messages to Berlin describing such helpful activities of a German spy codenamed H-21. French intelligence agents intercepted the message, and from that information, they identified H-21 as Matahari. The messages were in code that some claim that German intelligence knew had already been broken by the French. And actually, they hadn't been broken by the French. It had been broken by the British. But it left some to claim that the messages were just made up and contrived. But the Germans, this was the same code the Germans were convinced was unbreakable and was used to transmit the Zimmerman telegram.
Yeah, and this is, British are a badass when it comes to breaking codes.
Well, the people smart.
Yeah.
It's never sunny out there.
But, so they broke these codes, right? The Zimmerman telegraph that you, we'll talk about later, which was one of the key factors that led to the U.S. getting involved in the war. But they broke these codes, and one of these codes identified Matahari as an agent working for Germany. So we've got her working for France as a possibly working for France as a agent, a spy, and now she's been identified working for Germany, the other side, as a spy. So there's questions as to whether she was working for either one or she was working for both. We just don't know.
Right.
Just a side note that British broke the Enigma thing. Mm-hmm. But and the British was also the first ones to come out with radar. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what the name of the radar they called it?
I don't.
O'Reilly.
Snoopy.
Snoopy.
Like Red Baron.
Yeah, the Germans couldn't figure out when it was coming over. You know, they'd send these squadrons out, and all of a sudden they'd be like, oh, we're going to kick their ass now. And all of a sudden, 28 RAF planes show up. They were like, how the hell did they do that? It was straight off. It was Snoopy. But they named it Snoopy.
Snoopy.
And then that's where the dog came from.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Charles. Okay. So so now we have Matahari identified by the French authorities as being a German spy. And she is then arrested and taken to trial.
Well, she's, and this is a weird time, because you got to understand there's a lot of controversy still about whether she was a spy, whether she wasn't a spy. And you got to understand the time and the situation. Now, at that time, Germany's just kicking allies' asses. Okay, so now the allies got to come
up. Yeah, the
up
war is going, at this point, the war is going good for the Central Powers.
Yeah, so France. You know, which France should have they ever since Napoleon have they won a war?
No,
I mean, they ain't gonna win a war, so they're looking around like, oh,
at the very best, it was at a stalemate for them.
Well, there was the Germans, they could not beat back the German advances at that time, and so they got to blame somebody,
right?
So, you know, might as well blame her. They was blaming a lot of people for being spies. What they weren't saying was, well, our generals are kind of ruining
the pooch on this one, guys.
Yeah, digging these trenches might not have been the best idea. So what they was doing was real or imagined, they had all kinds of people they were blaming for spying. That's where they were laying the blame on spies.
Yeah, well, I mean, all the countries had internal, you know, people were getting sick of the war. It was going nowhere, and, you know, this, you know, 75 million people died or whatever, and there was no end in sight, and you get, you know, after a while, you know, people give you some slack, but after a while, people start to get a little antsy, saying, hey, when's this thing going to end?
Yeah, and the British, the French, they was like, oh, no, we'd be kicking ass if it weren't for those spies.
Mm-hmm.
So they start putting people up. Now you got Georges Ledoux here, Captain Georges Ledoux. He's with the French intelligence.
I like the name Ledoux.
Georges Ledoux. He did some shady things with the evidence against her. He constructed in a very, very damning way. And there's some accounts he even tampered with it. Now, this Ledoux fella, later on, he got tried as a spy, as a double agent. So I wouldn't believe a damn word. But first of all, I wouldn't believe a damn word any Frenchman told me.
Please don't insult any people on this podcast.
No, I mean, come on. We all been around long enough. You know Frenchmen. You believe anything they say? I believe a Russian before I believe a Frenchman.
I don't think I know anybody.
So this was kind of like the McCarthyism. They were just blaming everybody.
They were blaming. Spies, but I mean,
well, sure.
It was how the generals could lay the blame. You know, not because they were strategically inept. It was spies. So. Now, Matahari, she says, yeah, I had a German officer. He paid me for some sexual favors. And, you know, the colonel don't see anything wrong with that.
That's fine.
I mean, I approve
you
of
want to put out some sexual favors to a German officer? Although the German's into weird stuff. I don't know what he was getting, but... But anyway, and she was Dutch. Shit, they do anything for money. You know how the Dutch is.
Oh, my God.
But, and plus, she's getting a regular stipend from this Dutch baron. So, you know, she basically, when she came in here to court, she's like, I'm putting out to everybody and I'm collecting checks.
Right.
You know, I'm basically, she was...
So basically you're saying that she was receiving money for sexual favors from multiple sources.
Right. And this lack of perceived moral scruples
at this point, she's 41 years old.
Yeah. Now,
she'd stopped dancing because she felt like she'd gotten too fat to dance.
And you got to
stop dancing, but she was still whoring it up.
I was not going to say that. I was going to say you got to give it up to a woman who 41 years old and can still charge for it.
You know, there are hookers at Amsterdam that are 80 and still charge for it.
Well, that's because they, you know, everybody got a niche. There's midgets that are the people are paying for. I mean,
80-year-old midgets.
You go over to Denmark,
no, they got 80-year-old.
They
women.
Got donkey brothels. I mean,
yeah, they
it's
got
just weird stuff over
they
there.
They got
so. Animal brothels. Yes,
yeah,
they
animal
do.
Brothels.
They in Amsterdam, they got two sisters who
yes.
work in her.
They're like 100 years old.
Yeah, they're
yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Really old. Yeah,
okay. Yeah,
but they're very good at their
back,
job.
Back
they're
to
good.
Mata.
Well, hell no, they got 200 years of experience between them.
I'm telling you,
I guess
back to Mata.
Okay,
they
so yeah, I'm
hips.
Sorry. They do it break. Ow!
That would suck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wonder if you get a refund.
I bet not.
I that's
bet that's a thing.
Is that workers' comp?
Maybe it just pops in and out.
Is that workers' comp? You wonder.
Mata Hari.
Okay, I'm sorry. We was talking about Mata Hari. So Mata Hari. Mata Hari. That's the
really?
What we're gonna
that's
call
what we're doing
now.
Now?
Mata Hari.
No.
Her lack of, she was described as a woman without scruples, accustomed to make use of men. She is the type of woman who was born to be a spy. Now, that's what Captain George Ledoux said.
Yeah.
And they
Ledoux.
Just interviewed her and interviewed her and interviewed her, and they did a lot of psychological things, sleep deprivation, you know, kept her up, shined a bright light on her face, throw cold water on her. They might have even waterboarded her. I don't know. I don't know if waterboarding was a thing then. But
I don't know.
I think they used the rack on her.
Okay.
But anyway.
So anyway, he's
we don't know what they did.
He's embellishing at the moment. But okay.
But
so.
it was very intense interrogations.
Okay.
And they really didn't come up with anything.
Okay.
But because she's, you know, I mean, she's getting banged more than a drum in a jazz band.
Well, and she's going across, you know, a lot. I travel a lot, so I know every time, you know, usually every time I go out of the country, because I travel a lot, every time I come back in, I get pulled over by security, and they ask me a million questions, and so I'm sure during
well, you
war
look
time,
a little
you're
shifty.
A weird old
you
man.
You look a little shifty.
You're a weird old man coming
no,
back
my,
in the country.
My point is, during wartime, and she's going from one side to the other, you know, you're putting yourself in a situation where you can draw a lot of attention.
Yeah. Now this and this is important too because it was a spy thing. She did not get a trial in a court of law. Although again, you know, you get tried in France. We just saw what happens over there. It's 38 different trials.
Well, but, I mean, this is wartime too.
Yeah, so. But she got tried by a military tribunal.
Right.
And the evidence level you need for that is
lower.
Well, her defense lower. Attorney wasn't allowed to cross examine anybody. I mean, he got screwed. He couldn't. He wasn't allowed to. He was denied permission to either cross-examine the prosecution's witnesses or examine his own witness directly.
Right. Yeah.
What the hell is that?
That you just basically sit there. They fire out accusations and say
innocent.
Okay.
I mean, guilty until you're proven innocent.
Yeah. So it was a military tribunal trial. Now it took them 45 minutes to return a guilty verdict.
That long.
Yeah, well, they wanted to stay because they went out at like 10:45.
Of lunch.
Yeah, you get the lunch voucher.
Yeah, you do.
So.
Wonder if they have fries
and bread.
And the only thing she had to say was, it's impossible, it's impossible. And she probably did it in a different, it's impossible. Now, I'll tell you one thing interesting
like
about the girl, though. She, later on, they did a movie about her in Greta Garbo. But anyway, now I'm going to tell you something about this woman. You say what you want about Mata Hari. The woman had some balls on her. She
yes.
had a set of stones on her. When they took her out for a firing squad, she wasn't bound. She refused a blindfold. You know what she even did? She blew kisses to the soldiers that was about to kill her. They fired one volley of shots. She goes down. Officer walks over, puts two in the head. She done for. That's the end of Mata Hari.
And didn't they keep her body for a while? Or?
They lost it.
Yeah,
they lost the body. They found her head. They lost it and found it. Yeah, what the hell did they cut her head off for?
I don't know. But they couldn't find her head.
Out.
They never have found her head.
Because the head was that's the one guy. The execution. They shot her in the chest. You know, in the firing squad.
Well, they shot her in the head.
No, they shot her in the chest with the rifles, and then the officer, when she fell down, walked up and put two in the head, so they couldn't
run.
Right. Now, there's a lot of mystery still surrounding her life, her alleged double agency. It's become kind of a legend, but Timmy alluded to the Zimmerman thing, the Zimmerman
telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a thing where the British code breakers, they intercepted an encrypted message, all right? And it's meant for Heinrich von Eckert. He's the German ambassador to Mexico. Now, what he's saying is, yeah, the German ambassador to Mexico, how does that work? Where can I get some good bratwurst in Mexico? But you can't get sauerkraut in Mexico.
You really can't.
You can't. You go over there to Mexico with lederhosen on, they're going to kick your ass right out.
They will kick your ass, yeah.
But anyway, here's what this thing says, and they broke the code on it.
Because that's what they do.
Yeah, they broke the German, or the British broke the code.
That's what the
British do. Yeah, they do that well.
And here's what they tell them. Here's what they tell Mexico, okay?
So what the Germans tell Mexico?
Yeah, if you get in a war, you jump in a war with us, we will we'll give you military aid, we'll give you financial aid. You just attack America, attack the United States. And in return, we'll give you Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
Well, I don't know why in the hell. This is what I don't get.
The Mexicans were smart and didn't do it.
No, what the Mexicans did was just waited 75 years and took them over anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mexicans got Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. But, I mean, but anyway, these things, this... No, I'm just saying. Who the hell cares if Texas goes?
Continue,
I mean, I think we ought to get Texas back to the Mexicans.
Texans do.
Yes. We have a lot of listeners in Texas. Go ahead.
I know, but they kind of own their... They're as big as Russia, for Christ's sake.
They annexed us. We didn't annex them. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, if I was at the Alamo, we would have won it.
Okay.
The colonel would have gone.
Matahari.
Okay. So they give us to the United States, and the United States, they just mad as hell. I mean, they put it on the newspapers, everything else. So relations between Germany and the United States, they'd already been severed, you know, a long, long time ago. And Germany just, they resume their submarine warfare, you know, and they're shooting down U.S. vessels, which is kind of... A little hypocritical of us in that whole thing. We talked about that we told Germany, you can't shoot any of our ships, but we put one passenger on the ship, and we load it up with munitions for Britain and send it over there. And the Lusitania actually was filled up with weapons.
Yeah, there was three major reasons why the U.S. got involved in the war. One was the unlimited U-boat warfare, which was sinking...
Were any of them Matahari?
Well, no, but it's related because this code...
kind of proves from the documents, they were released out in about 1970. This code from the other things they had intercepted, it pretty much proved that she was indeed giving Germany some information. Now, she wasn't necessarily giving them any helpful information.
She was on their payroll.
But she was on the payroll.
She was on their payroll.
She was on everybody's payroll.
I mean,
she was on more people's payroll than, you know.
So she was one of the first ones to take her clothes off on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So technically she was a German agent, I think is what we're saying. So she, in that sense, she was guilty. Whether or not she provided them any valuable information or just took their money, that's the question. The breaking of the code, though, in relation to Matahari, is that, as Chuck mentioned, they when they broke this code about with the Germans and found out Matahari was a spy, they also broke the code about the Zimmermann telegraph, which, as Charles said, was a Germany's attempt to entice Mexico into the war against the United States.
Well, and here's the funny part, and I kind of laugh about this, because what Germany is saying is, Mexico, we want you to be the go-between and get Japan in this.
Yeah,
against
Japan
the
is
States.
Also...
So how would you like to be the German guy? It'd be like that game of telephone, you know, you play when you're a kid. The German guy telling the Mexican guy something, and him going telling the Japanese guy something.
Well, Germany's goal was is if the United States got involved with the war, they wanted Mexico and Japan to tie us down so that we couldn't send troops over to Europe. So they wanted, you know, they enticed the Zimmermann telegram enticed Japan to Mexico to join the war, and also to try to recruit Japan to join the war against the United States.
Well, and Wilson was a little shifty too, because he had just been elected on a platform of
he didn't get us into war.
He kept us out of war.
But now it's 1917. Mm-hmm. We know the tide's turning. We know that the Central Powers are probably going to lose this thing. And we want to get at the table when they start divvying up the, because to the victor goes the spoils.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to see that.
If you had ever won anything, Blue Hat Devil, you'd know the victor goes the spoils.
Really? But the funny thing about the Zimmerman telegram, and I know this
you,
is,
so I want it live.
This is getting
well,
away.
That's
from,
true.
This is getting away from my heart. But the funny thing was,
wait, over here.
No, the Zimmerman telegram.
Try to stay on focus.
The Germans just denied it and said we didn't send. You know, we didn't try and entice Mexico to join. That's Britain trying to get the United States to come into the war on their side. United States was isolationist. That's how Wilson got elected, reelected president.
Oh, there was a ballsy bunch. They was like, oh yeah, we sent it.
Yeah, Germany was like, yeah, we sent that telegram. We sent it. But don't be offended. It's only if you get involved in a war. Nothing personal.
Yeah. But it's strictly business, Fredo.
So it did not go over well with the American public and American Congress. So that, as well as the sinking of the Lusitania, led to the United States entering the war. And we all know how that
turned
out.
The telegram came out right at the very end of February. March 1st, they released the contents to the newspapers. Within 30 days, April 2nd, we were in a war.
Yeah.
We declared war on the Central Powers.
So the British, of course, it was to their advantage to release that. But they did break the code, and they broke the code that identified Mata Hari as a German agent. We're not sure if she was also at some point a French agent. Sounds like she was making money wherever she could. Whether or not she gave him valuable information, we don't know, but she did take money from the Germans, and so she was found guilty, she was executed, her body was preserved and then lost.
Yep, lost her head.
And her head, yes, was also lost, so.
I still don't get Severin in the head. I don't know. Was that just meanness? Was that spite?
Maybe that's how they did it to get up into the brain.
I think
brain.
It was what, the last sighting was like 1954 of her body or something like that?
Well, yeah, they didn't discover till 2000 that it was gone, that the head had disappeared, because the museum that it was in had been relocated in 1954.
Oh, okay.
And there was inventory taken.
Somewhere between 1954 and 2000.
And there was inventory taken, and it was there.
I wonder
there.
If it's dangling from somebody's rearview mirror.
Could be. Record in 1918, the museum received the body,
wonder if that
but
guy
none
got
of the
it.
Remains could be accounted for.
He had to make some Mata Hari gloves.
Maybe. Again. Okay, Brandy, what's your final thoughts on Mata Hari?
I like her. She was just getting done what she needed to get done and doing what she needed to do to get by.
Do you think she was a spy?
Well, evidently she was a spy, so it doesn't matter what I thought. I don't know that she gave anything useful. It certainly wouldn't. She was living a pretty decent life. I mean, it wasn't going to behoove her to really do that, but...
Do you think somewhat of it, there was somewhat maybe of an excitement factor for her?
I mean, I'm sure there was because, you know, like we said, she was getting older. She was 41. She retired from dancing.
How old are you?
Not 41.
What happens when women turn 40?
And this is a theory that's...
It's not a theory. Look, anyway, she'd turned 41.
So she started to...
And she started to grow a penis. She'd gained some weight. I will punch you square in the throat.
I'm just saying, women start to put on a little bit of ass after about 35.
You're saying they take on masculine features.
No, you say that.
Well, they do.
You just mimic
you. On masculine
so anyway,
features.
She... but she, you know, I think she had some money set back. But, yeah, I think that there was an excitement factor to it. And I think it was just she thought it would be easy. She thought it would be easy money.
I think, too, that she embellished her, you know, she embellished her story about being this exotic dancer from Indonesia and all that. I think it's just she wanted to kind of add to that reputation. As you said, she was getting older and... You know, she almost like a midlife crisis kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. this will make life a little bit more exciting for me.
Her kids are dead. The one marriage she had failed because he was a dick. Mm-hmm. Her kids are dead. She's been
and she knew all these important.
She's been whoring around Europe.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, they didn't
herself.
Have the cure for syphilis back then.
Well, I wonder how she didn't get syphilis if it was her husband.
I wonder how half of Europe didn't get the syphilis the way she was throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add of any kind of substance?
Yes, sir. Well, what's your final
thoughts on she was a dirty, dirty whore.
Don't say that.
But I don't have. But that's okay with me.
You got number love.
I got. Yeah. I mean, that's the world needs those. Okay. Because if now I want you to think about this. Right now, what's our problem in the world? We got radical, you know, people blowing people up and
ISIS
and yeah. Now think about if everybody in ISIS became just a dirty, dirty whore. What a great world this would be.
What is your thoughts as a candidate on legalizing prostitution?
No. One of the first things I will do is legalize prostitution.
Huh?
Legalize prostitution.
I think you should make it a requirement.
Well, you know what? The colonel like to make an extra couple bucks now and again. So I'm a legalized prostitution.
Well, it maybe should be legal just for attractive women.
Amen. Well, amen. And,
to each his own.
Yeah, because there's some over 40-year-old women out there that, you know, they need some loving, too.
That haven't turned
they got
into manual features.
Well, they might have, but they got checkbooks and they need some loving.
I see. So you'll be a gigolo.
Well, I'm just a gigolo. Oh. And everywhere I go.
Okay. That wraps it up for Mata Hari. I think that Mata was an interesting person. She lived a very interesting life. I think that she was probably guilty of being an agent. And that, you know, when you're guilty of being a spy in wartime, you generally end up being executed. So it probably was a just decision. Verdict, but Brandy, I don't think that she probably gave any really crucial information to either side.
I admire the way the woman died.
I admired how she lived. She lived an interesting life. So that's it for us right now. So thank you for joining us. And again, if you're listening, you know, check out our Facebook page. If you're listening on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. And check us out on Stitcher. And we will have another podcast out really soon. Thank you, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.